Hello, this is Sharon, and I'll be bringing you the pantograph for today, which is Wednesday, February 26th, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with an article entitled, Beamon Renews Fight for Jury Trial. Alan Beamon, who spent 13 years in prison for a murder he did not commit, has renewed his fight for a jury trial against the town of Normal and three former police officers. Beamon, now 47 and living in his hometown of Rockford, was a student at Illinois Wesleyan University in 1993 when he was accused of strangling and stabbing Jennifer Lockmiller of Decatur, his former girlfriend, in a Normal apartment. Convicted in 1995, he was sentenced to 50 years in prison and served more than a dozen years before the Illinois Supreme Court reversed his conviction in 2008. He was granted a certificate of innocence by a judge and a pardon from Governor Pat Quinn. Last year, the 4th District Appellate Court denied a second appeal of a 2016 lawsuit Beamon filed against former officers Tim Friesmeier, Dave Warner, Frank Zion, and the town of Normal. Beamon argued the officers influenced prosecutors to identify Beamon as the only suspect, despite having proof he was in Rockford at the time of the murder. Other suspects were not considered, the filings. On Tuesday, Beamon appeared before the Supreme Court to ask for a jury trial on the matter, despite the denial, and filed a 78-page document in support of his request. A ruling is expected later this spring. An attorney for the town of Normal did not return a request for comment. In essence, Beamon now is asking the Supreme Court to overrule an appellate decision that Beamon did not satisfy the legal requirements for a malicious prosecution case because there were no earlier findings of insufficient evidence. His lawyers say the appellate ruling contradicts several federal decisions and would radically change state law by holding that a wrongfully convicted plaintiff automatically loses a malicious prosecution claim unless a trial court made a finding of insufficient evidence for conviction. We are hopeful that the Illinois Supreme Court, which has twice ruled in Allen's favor, will hear the case again and finally allow a jury trial to go forward, said David Shapiro, a Beamon lawyer who is MacArthur Justice Center's Supreme Court and appellate director. Nothing can right the wrong that was done to him or remove the stain it has left on the history of our state. But the closest thing to it is a jury of Illinois citizens finally hearing his case. In reversing the appellate court last December, the Supreme Court held that officers can be liable for malicious prosecution when their bad faith misconduct causes a wrongful conviction. Beamon, in his new filing, argues the appellate court disregarded the Supreme Court finding and ignored evidence of false testimony and concealment of evidence. I've spent my adult life fighting for justice and accountability. I'm not stopping now, said Beamon in a statement released Tuesday. The idea that this lawsuit somehow threatens good cops is inherently flawed. Protecting malicious cops from accountability undermines public faith in the rule of law. A college student at the time of his arrest, petitioner languished in prison for over a dozen years for a crime he manifestly did not commit, Beamon's lawyers argue in the documents filed Tuesday. This court unanimously reversed the appellate court and threw out the conviction in 2008. And again, unanimously reversed the appellate court in this civil case last year. Beamon deserves a day in court to seek justice from the men who robbed him of his youth through a bad faith investigation. Polish treat brings crowds to bakery. Denny's Donuts marked Fat Tuesday with sale of Patskies. Before spending 40 days reflecting on Christ, Bloomington Normal wanted Patskies. The plump fried donuts are filled with fruit jelly or cream and originate from a Polish tradition of celebrating the last day before Lent fasting begins. That day is known as Fat Tuesday in North America or Fat Thursday in Poland. So before foregoing sweets and other decadent treats for Lent, people flocked to Denny's Donuts and Bakery, 1107 South Main Street, Bloomington, for punchkies. From what I understand, it started in the Middle Ages, said David Marquette, son of bakery owner Barb Marquette. For Lent, you'd give up your extra fattening stuff, your sugar, your fruits. They just cleared out the cupboard and put it all together and fried it. Punchkies, denser and heavier than regular donuts, are generally made with more sugar, shortening, egg, and milk than regular donuts. Denny's double fries and double stuffs its punchkies. Marquette said his father started selling punchkies more than 20 years ago after Fat Tuesday observances trickled into Bloomington. The tradition is celebrated by many people in Chicago, where the punchkies are sold open face and smothered in fruits and cream, he said. On a bustling Fat Tuesday, Denny's couldn't keep trays stocked fast enough as customers ordered 2 to 3 dozen punchkies at a time. Today has just been crazy, said Tina Kramer, a bakery office worker who helped at the register due to the high number of orders. People were just coming in today and getting 3 dozen at a time. That was unexpected. It was nonstop this morning. Denny's used to start selling punchkies the weekend before Fat Tuesday. This year, they started the day after Valentine's Day. Marquette said the bakery sold 250 dozen punchkies by 11 a.m. Tuesday, excluding the amount ordered in advance. Illinois State University ordered 150 dozen punchkies. Despite the snow and gloomy weather, punchkie sales on Tuesday did not slow down. A group of regular customers, who referred to their front window table as the old men's table, tried a punchkie for the first time after learning what they were. Marty Freehill, Dave Biddle, Chuck Janacek, Bill Clark, and Tom Henderson noted the heavier dough and extra filling, then bit into their treats before giving their official approval. Although a little messy, the group said punchkies were pretty tasty. Freehill nodded his head and said, "They're pretty good. I'll say that." Pritzker, there is only one budget. Schools to get hike in funding even if fair tax amendment fails. Governor J.B. Pritzker denied on Tuesday that he is presenting two budgets, one based on passage of the progressive or fair tax amendment by voters this fall, and one based on that proposed constitutional amendment being rejected. There is only one budget, he said in a meeting with the joint editorial boards of the Pantograph and the Decatur Herald and Review. It has a reserve that won't be spent if fair tax doesn't pass. You have to have a balanced budget. Even without passage of the amendment, which would allow the state to raise more revenue, all school districts would get an increase in funding, he said. If the amendment is approved, $350 million more than last year would go to school funding using the evidence-based formula, he said. If it's rejected, schools would still get $200 million more using a formula that allocates money based on need. District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley has said previously that as a Tier 2 district, the larger figure would result in an additional $200,000 for District 87. Asked how the uncertainty about funding would affect the ability of districts to plan, Pritzker said, "We'll know 4.5 months into the fiscal year whether the amendment passes." When the difference of $150 million is divided among the state's many school districts, the amount in question turns out to be important, but not determinative, he said. Increased funding for K-12 education is important, not only because Illinois ranks last in the nation when it comes to state funding for schools, said Pritzker, but also because of the impact that it has on property taxes. The governor said, property taxes have gone up because the state is slowly reducing its share of funding for schools. Pritzker cited two other areas placing pressure on property taxes, infrastructure, and pensions for police and firefighters. He noted that the current budget provides $650 million to local governments for infrastructure projects, and said another measure he helped pass, which consolidated police and fire pension funds so they can be invested more wisely, will result in a better return that will alleviate pressure for higher taxes. As for the state-level pension problems, Pritzker said, "We need to be sure we aren't skipping payments, as has happened in the past." In regard to the recent commutation of the sentence of former Governor Rod Blagojevich, and how that brought back talk of Pritzker's conversations with Blagojevich that were caught on an FBI wiretap, Pritzker said, "I think we've talked already too much about Governor Blagojevich. We need to move on." He said what was disturbing to him was very little of the ethics reforms approved after Blagojevich's impeachment dealt with legislators' activities, and that's where we're seeing problems today. Pritzker said the state should stop the revolving door of lawmakers leaving office and going to work for companies for whom they supported legislation while in the General Assembly. He also said elected officials should not be allowed to be paid lobbyists, even if they are lobbying another branch of government. Today's Flick Fact. The Wichita State Shockers, a regular Illinois State University foe before dropping out of the Missouri Valley Conference 2 years ago, are regarded again this year and again. Basketball aficionados are wondering just what is a shocker. Do you know? And the answer? The nickname is the 19th century name given to harvest hands in Kansas who would stack grain bundles into upright groupings called shocks. Invention of the combine ended the need for any shockers except on the basketball court. Today in history, today is Wednesday, February 26th, the 57th day of 2020. There are 309 days left in this year. Today's highlight on February 26, 1993, a truck bomb built by Islamic extremists exploded in the parking garage of the North Tower of New York's World Trade Center, killing 6 people and injuring more than 1,000 others. The bomb failed to topple the North Tower into the South Tower, as the terrorists had hoped. Both structures were destroyed in the 9/11 attack 8 years later. On this date, in 1616, astronomer Galileo Galilei met with a Roman Inquisition official, Cardinal Robert Bellarmine, who ordered him to abandon the heretical concept of heliocentrism, which held that the Earth revolved around the sun instead of the other way around. In 1904, the United States and Panama proclaimed a treaty under which the U.S. agreed to undertake efforts to build a ship canal across the Panama Isthmus. In 1916, actor-comedian Jackie Gleason was born in Brooklyn, New York. In 1917, President Woodrow Wilson signed a congressional act establishing Mount McKinley National Park, now Denali National Park, in the Alaska Territory. And a thought today from Jackie Gleason, who lived from 1916 through 1987. If you have it, and you know you have it, then you have it. If you have it, and don't know you have it, you don't have it. If you don't have it, but you think you have it, then you have it. Oh, how time flies locally from the pages of the pantograph. 100 years ago, on February 26, 1920, the State Board of Health is now involved in the water problem that's killed several workmen at the CNA shops. An inspector visited the property and checked every foot of piping for possible contaminants. A full report is expected later. 75 years ago, on February 26, 1945, Staff Sergeant William Huffman was fatally wounded in action in the Pacific. Also, Private Harry Price was one of 730 prisoners from Bataan who were aboard a Japanese freighter when it was sunk off the Philippines. Both Huffman and Price were from Bloomington. 50 years ago, on February 26, 1970, the new Robert Hall clothes store will open in 4 days on El Dorado Road. It's part of a large chain and will be the 39th store in Illinois alone. Robert Hall makes its own clothing and claims to sell more men's suits and coats than any other clother in America. And 25 years ago, on February 26, 1995, Benjamin Hildebrand III died at home 3 days before his 77th birthday. He was active in the business community and held many memberships in service, conservation, and fraternal organizations. He was chairman of McLean County Title Company, the family business. O'Neill Park Pool to open in summer. The O'Neill Park Pool will open this summer, even though the 45-year-old aluminum pool is well beyond its 25-year lifespan. From the work we've done this fall and over the winter, we probably have this year and next year. Jay Tetzloff, the city's director of Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Arts, told the city council on Monday night. I'm fairly confident of that. Beyond that, every year something else comes up. The wading pool for infants and toddlers at the West Side Park at 1515 West Chestnut Street closed about 3 years ago because of a leak that was beyond repair. Tetzloff shared that news during a council discussion about a related expense for the pool listed in the city's $230.3 million proposed budget for fiscal 2021, which begins on May 1st. A proposed $738,000 expenditure is for design work to replace the pool. That figure is about 10% of the project's total projected cost, said City Manager Tim Gleason. But city officials have not decided on how to replace the pool and pay for it. The Parks Department has proposed a $10 million rejuvenation of the entire park, including replacing the pool with an aquatic center, with a lazy river water ride, or other popular water park attractions such as slides or a wave pool. But some council members have expressed support for exploring whether to replace the pool with one that was similar in size and covered so it could be used all year, but not developing an aquatic center. Right now, we need to determine what the project's scope is. Is it a replacement pool? Is it a large redevelopment of that part of the park? Said Tetzloff. Once that's determined, we would hire an architect and engineering firm to come in and do the design work for whatever the scope of that project is, he added. We're probably going to lose one summer with O'Neill no matter what we do from a construction perspective. When asked by Ward 8 Alderman Jeff Craybill about the revenue the pool generates, Tetzloff said right now it recovers about 17% of its operating expenses. If we replace what's there, I expect we will be around 20% tops, because it will be the same amenity, just newer, he added. If we go to a larger, much closer to an aquatic center, the feasibility study that we did came back around 80%. I think that's a little high. I would probably expect it to be around 60%. Ward 7 Alderman Scott Black, who represents the ward in which the park is located, said he wants to see the focus be less on cost recovery and operational expenses and more on determining the project's scope. This isn't an economic development project, said Black. This is a quality of life issue for an area that absolutely deserves it and is a facility that we've stretched the life out of for years and years and years. The city is seeking funding to replace the pool from the state's $45 billion Rebuild Illinois capital program approved last year. We fully expect that in the fiscal 2022 budget, we'll be ready to pull the trigger on the overall project, said Gleason. But the final details definitely have to come from the council. Forecasters warn about drifting as storm shifts. Central Illinois may have escaped snow piling up to 6 inches, but forecasters warn that drifting could cause problems Wednesday. Total accumulations of 2 to 3 inches were expected across most of central Illinois, including the Bloomington-Normal area, according to the National Weather Service. The storms showed signs of weakening, so we decided to lower the snow totals, meteorologist Chris Miller of the National Weather Service said late Tuesday afternoon. We still could see some areas get close to 4 inches east of McLean County to Danville and northern Indiana, he said. We do need to be concerned about drifting. A north wind gusting 25 to 30 miles per hour on Wednesday is likely to cause problems, especially on east-west roadways, said Miller. Although a burst of snow Tuesday morning was rather wet and melted in the afternoon, Miller said the snow expected to fall overnight would be a more typical snow subject to drifting. The winter weather advisory is in effect until 6 p.m. Wednesday for most of central Illinois, calling for the heaviest snowfall rates to be between 2 and 6 a.m. Wednesday. The advisory warned motorists to plan on slippery road conditions that could impact the morning commutes. For road conditions, you can go to gettingaroundillinois.com. The temperatures aren't going to do much and are going to hang around that 30-degree mark most of the day Wednesday, said Miller. The snow will be around for a few days, with highs in the upper 20s to 30s through Saturday. Lows will be in the mid-teens for a few nights, with snow on the ground once the clouds clear, said Miller. It's a return to winter momentarily, he said. But take heart, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not an oncoming snowplow. Miller said the weather pattern will switch on Sunday, with winds turning around to the south and temperatures rising to the mid-40s and a high near 50 by next Monday. Three face sex trafficking charges. Three Bloomington Normal men face federal charges involving sex trafficking and child pornography. A 17-year-old girl was also charged by the McLean County State's Attorney's Office in connection with this case. Teon D. Williams, 20, of the 800 block of East Washington Street, Bloomington, is charged with child sex trafficking for crimes allegedly committed from 2017 to 2019. Jaquan V. Howard, 26, of the 1700 block of Linda Lane in Normal, is charged with child sex trafficking and production of child pornography from 2018 to 2019. Andrew J. Wheeler, 24, of the 500 block of Bradley Lane in Normal, is charged with child sex trafficking and child sex trafficking conspiracy in 2019. The arrests were made Friday as part of a long-term Bloomington Police Department investigation that began in June with assistance from the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office, Central District of Illinois. The police department announced the arrests on Tuesday and declined further comment. In its statement, the department said, "It is a crime when a person younger than 18 is induced to perform a commercial sex act, regardless of force, fraud, or coercion. To report an incident that may involve the prostitution of children locally, call 911 or call the Bloomington Police Department at 309-820-8888. To get help or report a tip on activity occurring elsewhere, you can call the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888. Anyone with additional information regarding these crimes is asked to contact Detective Ty Klein at 309-434-2366. Normal man charged with 18 felonies. 18 felonies are pending against a Normal man for sexual crimes that allegedly involved a child. Austin Doyle, 29, of the 500 block of Greenbrier Drive, is charged with 14 counts of predatory criminal sexual assault with a victim under the age of 13, which is a Class X felony. Six of those crimes allegedly occurred from January 1st to January 4th. Four allegedly occurred between December 31st, 2018 and December 31st, 2019, and four between August 1st, 2017 and December 30th, 2018. He's also charged with three counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse with a victim under 13 and one count of exploiting a child under 13 by removing their clothing. Doyle was taken into custody on February 6th and arraigned on a Friday. His bond is set at $1 million with 10% to apply. He was initially charged with one additional count of predatory criminal sexual assault, but it was dismissed in court. According to court documents, Doyle will be represented by Brendan Bukalski of the Johnson Law Group in Bloomington. He was not available for comment on Tuesday. We'll take a short break now, and then I'll return with the second half of the Pantograph for February 26, 2020. Please stay tuned.